Welcome to Hands at the Table. I'm your co-host, Jeff Bramhall. Alongside fellow massage therapist, Boris Aranyi, this podcast shows massage therapists how powerful our profession can be. We believe that as a craft and as a profession, massage therapy is only limited by a therapist's imagination and willingness to put in the work. By sharing what we're learning, what we're working on, and what's captured our interest, we hope to broaden your perspective, inspire you to set your standard high, and invest in your craft. Thank you for joining us. And welcome back to Hands at the Table with Bori and Jeff. Today, we are doing another episode responding to an episode of the Thinking Practitioner podcast. This one was interesting because Bori reached out to me saying, hey, we should talk about this. And I had actually emailed the Thinking Practitioner hosts, Till and Whitney, with a whole bunch of stuff that I thought about this episode. So we are, this really clearly struck a nerve with both of us. So if you want to hear what we're responding to, the first thing that you should do is go over to the Thinking Practitioner podcast and find their episode from October 19th, 2022, called The Future of the Profession with their guest, Sandy Fritz. Sandy has been around the world of massage therapy for a really long time, has been involved in all different parts of the massage therapy world as a school owner, as a franchise owner, as a clinic owner, as a practitioner, as a continuing education person, as somebody involved in all of these, and someone involved in trying to unify the whole profession. And so she's a fountain of great information, but we both listened to her talk for an hour and came away saying, ooh, this makes me think, which as far as I'm concerned is like, and I said as much to Whitney and Till when I emailed them, I'm really excited about how much I'm thinking about this episode. And their response to me was along those same lines of, I'm really excited about how much this episode made me think. So today we're going to lead in with this from Boris' perspective. And I want to hear from you, what was it about this episode that got you, about this episode of Thinking Practitioner that got you interested in having this conversation?
Well, everything. I literally took me to listen, like I had to break it up to two parts because I got so, again, like me too, just like you, like emotionally pulled in. And I felt I was listening to on public transportation, like on the bus, and I could notice myself talking to myself and notice, I was like, oh my God, nobody understands. Like I'm listening to this and I'm just saying out things out loud. And same thing, like I was very responsive to it, as in visceral reaction. I was frustrated and sweaty and angry and happy and disappointed and overall, like not even like what they said is like what the situation is or where I see myself in this whole process, or even just a little bit disappointed of like how much I feel hopeless about doing anything about it or something. There was many, many things. And it's first of all, like what came to my mind, like this point is like, we are very blessed and I'm super grateful that we do a profession when I react to a podcast like this. Like, can you imagine you do a job and you do this profession and you hear something little bit about it and you get so responsive and so passionate about it? I'm like, this is why I do what I do. And this is why I'm not an architect, because I would not feel the same way about that.
Right? Oh man, right? That feeling of just like I came out of that episode, like you said, right? Like this whole gamut of emotion of like, wow, she is like reading my mind. She's reading my mind, or she's putting words to something that I had been, that like I didn't realize was super important to me. And like, oh my God, that's so valuable. And then like 2 minutes later being like, how could you possibly think that? And like, exactly. and the other part, and knowing that, like, you're knowing that she's super thoughtful, that mm-hmm. you're like, okay, you're really thoughtful. So you thought about thinking about this way. And so, like, how is it that, what's mm-hmm. going on in your brain that means that you think you're right? Because you are. Right? Like,
what's your data input? Yeah. Like that's the thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you're that's like the coolest thing when you have somebody that you disagree with and you're like, okay, like no one goes out and says stuff that they think is wrong. So it's like, okay, what are the circumstances under which you think you're right? And then it's what are the circumstances under which I think I'm right? Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh man, this is so freaking cool. So
it was really good. And it also hammered on a lot of things. It was so widespread. It
so
was
so like broad. Yeah.
So broad. And it was great to listen to that. And I kind of felt that episode could have gone very, very long. It could have, there were so many rabbit holes.
Yeah.
And they were so good about jumping around. Like, oh, okay, I'm going to step right next to it, though.
Right? Yeah. And I'm just thinking if it was an episode with us, it would have been like 5 hours long.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought. So it was like, we would have fallen into those rabbit holes deep.
Yeah.
Definitely. So it was, I think it was very, very stimulating. I loved it. And I actually really loved how different her approach and experience is. Mm-hmm. And I also realized that, again, lucky or unlucky, but we're seeing a very different world. I think like we're seeing very, very differently.
You mean say like in your practice, the world that you see through your practice is very different from the world that she's describing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But I also do think it's like, oh my God, like she's been, say a little what she said is like at the birth of this profession. Like,
yeah, she's been doing it for 40 years.
And like all the books, like I studied from her books. Like those are the basic massage books, the basic 1,000 pages. I mean, they're not short. So, and very thin paper. So I really respect that. And I also, respect that she's like still at it. Yeah. I mean, fighting for us. I mean, and again, in that perspective, we are us. Like she is fighting for us. Like, and, mm-hmm. and again, regardless of what she does and which direction she goes, it's still, you know, still broadening and increasing the respect of this education or is respecting the respect this profession. So yeah. I really like it.
Just to double click on that, that's something I came away from it really, really strongly with was like, I was like, man, she cares about this profession so much. And like, she has so much skin in the game in so many different places around caring about this profession and like, and building it up and helping to find a way for it to be what it, like what it can be. I was just like, that was the cool thing is like every part of this is like, oh, everything that I disagree on, I'm disagreeing in good faith with her argument, which is also made in good faith. And I feel like that's just so, that feels so enlivening and so exciting because this is where like, it's those gaps that allow us to learn. And it's it's so cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It was really good. Yeah.
One more plug. Go listen to that episode twice.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Twice or three times. Give yourself some time, take some notes. I mean, yes, there's so many different things. One of my favorite parts, of course, just because of my setup and everything, was the multidisciplinary approach and how much she takes place in these associations and coming togethers with different professionals. I really love that. My thought was that just because like of the things that we talk about all the time and same thing here, I guess in Hungary, it's very similar, like where massage therapists are appreciated or how much they belong into the healthcare system. Just like in the States, we have, you know, medical massage therapists like that work in hospitals and more on the medical side. And we have the massage therapists like myself that deal with relatively healthy individuals or generally healthy individuals. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was kind of thinking is that I feel we're trying to break into the wrong fields, not necessarily the wrong fields, but we're missing one direction. And we talked about it, this plenty is I'm more inclined to break into the psychological side, the emotional, the soul, the softer sides of this, because I do think it's not even that we don't have, because I do believe in our medical, mechanical, physical, physiological work that we do. But I also feel like we're missing a point by not getting closer to psychology, not getting closer to social studies, not getting closer to language. Again, we talked about this so many times. Or just if you think about expectations, those are not medical things. Like setting an expectation for your session, it's not a medical, it has nothing to do with healthcare itself. It's more the psychological, the softer side of things. So when we talk about multidisciplinary approaches, I always feel like, yes, we are also leaving psychiatry or psychology out, just as general healthcare. When we think about a general healthcare approach, when somebody walks into a clinic, they're not dealing with the social engagement, the psychosocial model. They're dealing with the biological part of it. And I think like we shouldn't miss that, because we're there. We're much closer than this. And I think like we shouldn't definitely not exclude that part, because we're in this relationship. We're in this, you know, social engagement with another human being for like an hour and a half. Our tone, our language, our intentions, our beliefs, our emotions do matter. We know that. We talked about this so many times, but we should definitely not miss that. And I kind of feel like as we're trying to break into this medical field and we're working so hard to get into the biological side. And I'm like, there's like a door wide open towards like the psychosocial model, wide open. Like psychologists are happy to have us. They are happy to talk to us. Like they're so much easier to work with, because they're like, you're not going to say anything. You're not talking, and you don't have to pick up the slack, right? You don't have to solve this person's life. Like you just there as a massage therapist. It's so much easier.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was one of my thoughts around that idea. It's like, I love the, you know, the cooperation, but I think we could branch out. I'm definitely inclined to branch out a little bit more towards the other side, or definitely as much.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And I hadn't considered it the way that you just phrased it, of like, if we do want to be multidisciplinary in our approach, what disciplines do we want to choose to engage with? I think that's a really interesting framing. And that's like a very first principles thought of I think it makes sense, I think, to a lot of people to say, to integrate massage therapy into our kind of traditional physical medical model. And I think it's a really interesting idea to say, why bother going into that? Like, why bother going down that path when there's another path that's actually open to us? And, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense for a number of reasons. And not the least of which is that, like, there's just such a growing consensus might not be the right word, but there's such growing momentum behind the integration of mind and body as it can be a psychological, like for psychological health. And there's also a lot less inertia with mental health practitioners than there is with physical health practitioners. And I had a great old boss who just, when I worked in sales, who would like get me out of doing things pretty regularly, because he would just say like, dude, just stop pushing rope, pull rope, don't push it. And that, like, and I can, and I think about the medical establishment, not through any fault of any individual practitioner, but the medical establishment is so entrenched in itself, and it is so, as like one of the points that I made in my message that I sent to Whitney and Till after listening to the episode a couple of times, was that there's a macroeconomic conversation where mm-hmm. Sandy kind of offhandedly said, like, I think she was comparing she was looking at like the VA, the in the US, the Veterans Administration, put out salaries for massage therapists and physical care, personal care aides, things like that. And Sandy's response was like, yeah, why do we think we're worth more than a physical care aide or a personal mm-hmm. care aide, like a PCA, like somebody who's like literally like taking care, like helping somebody getting on and off the toilet? Like, mm-hmm. why do we think that our job is worth more than that? And I think she's fundamentally asking the wrong question in that case, because I don't think we're worth more than a personal care aide. I think that our biological medical model and the biological medical economic model undervalues almost all individuals. And as mm-hmm. and as such, like, we are not, like, we shouldn't be fighting for scraps when we can exist in this whole separate world that values us appropriately and that puts us in mm-hmm. a position to be making, like, to be making to be making a living. Like, we should be mm-hmm. like, we should be able to do, we should, if you're going to choose the path you're going to go on, why would you choose the path that undervalues you mm-hmm. and that undervalues not only you but everybody that you're going to interact with in that space, including the patient?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And there's also like this medical field that, you know, it's mostly about the money. I mean, it sucks to say, but it is. Yeah. Like, when you go to the doctor's office, they're looking at you as a dollar bill. They're looking at you as a wallet. And there is a whole mental health field where there's not enough practitioners for so many people who need care. And what we could help out there is support those mental health professionals and support their work. And we could be, as a left hand, just like, okay, fine, like between two visits or something, like this mm-hmm. is something you could do. It could be more affordable, or you could be working together. But medical field is, I think it's hard to get referrals from, because they tend to keep their client in their own realm or in their own field. Sometimes, as we talked about this before, it's more like sick care, you know, they try, yep. I mean, It's just a system too. Like, it's not in their best interest for you to get well soon. Like, that's just bad. But
yeah, but even if it were right, like, I don't think it's fair to pin it on a, like, you know, I think it's not like every individual in the healthcare system is complicit in what the healthcare system, in how the healthcare system works, right? Like, mm-hmm. But at the same time, no individual is responsible for there's no individual who's responsible for the incentives and disincentives of the medical, of the whole medical system, right? Like, you know, a doctor, like, there are not enough, like, just as there's not enough mental health professionals, there's also not enough, like, MDs, right? True, like, there's not enough general practitioners, because in the US, like, general practitioners have been marginalized and you can't make as good of mm-hmm. a living as a GP. And so now, and then, like, insurance reimbursements for GPs goes down and down. So you have to have a high quantity of patients, which high quantity of patients,
less time with each, yes.
Lower quality of care. It's just what happens. And it's not like, there's not an individual who's responsible for this. Mm-hmm. And at the same, and so it's like, so, but I keep coming back to that idea that, like, the idea that, like, we just shouldn't get in, we can just as easily not integrate ourselves into a system that doesn't mm-hmm. value us. Like, we don't need to be valued by people who don't value us. It's like just as simple as that.
Right.
at the same time, because everything is like, there's two sides to all this stuff.
Yes.
The other thing I thought was really interesting is like one of the things that I think is implicit in a lot of Sandy's argument, specifically around integrating massage into systems like the VA, bringing it into hospitals and things like that, is that I think there's a fundamental optimism and belief that everyone should have access to massage. Mm-hmm. And I think that's incredibly noble. You know, maybe it's not realistic, but that is a noble thought. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. Like, I appreciate that a lot. And the only way that massage becomes accessible for when massage becomes accessible for a wider variety of people, when and if it is integrated into the traditional biohealthcare model. And because that's the system that almost every American is going to die in, right?
Right.
So having massage therapists in hospitals, not just in oncology wards, but having massage being integrated into all of these other things that are inside of the hospital, gives more people an opportunity to have massage, because right now it's just like, you know, a massage is something that someone does with discretionary income. And right. So I think that I don't want to put words, I wouldn't dare to put words into Sandy's mouth, but I think that she might, I wouldn't be surprised if she said that massage is as much of a right as healthcare is.
Yeah. And I can see that. And I appreciate, like, I think that would be great. There's two more things that came to my mind. Of course, that's where the rabbit hole comes in.
Yep.
So how about we don't even say that massage therapy is something that people should have access to? How about we say that is this that type of social interaction, that type of acceptance, that type of healing relationship is what people should have access to? And at that point, I don't even care if somebody's getting a massage or not, but do you have a relationship, that therapeutic alliance, that how Whitney phrases it usually, do you have access to that? And after that, I don't care if it's a massage therapist, a mental health worker, your GP, I don't care who it is.
Personal trainer,
anybody. I mean, I love the touch and I highly think, but again, that's, you know,
you wouldn't be a massage therapist if you didn't.
Exactly. So like, I do think that people need that nurturing touch, that non-judgmental nurturing touch. And again, like, I think that's what we're giving more than, again, the mechanical approach, or like, at least in my practice, like, yes, I know all the muscles and yes, I know all of the, you know, different tools and techniques that you use and all that stuff, but mainly it's your person that you're lending, your nervous system that you're lending to this person who is on the table, and that nurturing touch that we don't get anywhere else, because all the other touches, they do want something. They want sex, they want love, they want something from you. Whereas this is kind of a clear one. Like, I'm going to, like, you know, I'm going to care for you for like an hour, 90 minutes. And all you have to do is pay me. You don't have to love me back. You don't have to do anything that you don't want to do. You're just here and that's it. Yeah. So I think like, that's definitely like, that's how I would phrase it. It's not the massage. It's that relationship or that alliance or that coming together that people should have. And, on the same note with like the medical and the psychological, if we don't even have to separate it, but again, that also goes with our education. Mm-hmm. Like, our massage therapist should not just look into like, where can I do an ethics class for online? Where can I do another hands-on manual technique job? But what books should I read to understand human beings better? Mm-hmm. What books should I read to communicate better, to ask better questions, to don't judge, to be compassionate, to learn inquiring about somebody without judgment, without anything, and just being. So like, those are the things, again, that it's not just that our collaboration missed this angle, but our education, our inquiries, our curiosity kind of can miss this angle, because a lot of massage therapists are looking for just the next big technique. And there's no one big technique. You can learn that forever. Like, you can keep taking classes and it doesn't secure that you're going to be the best massage therapist ever. Yeah. But you could actually look into like other fields. And I think, again, like, we're missing the mark of like looking all the way back to medical models and medical research and all that stuff, because it's really hard to prove what we're doing. Like, there's not a lot of research. But if we start looking at the psychological side and the psychosocial side, there's many, many resources and research states that this kind of relationship heals, or this kind of being together heals, or these, you know, verbal techniques or communication skills or empathy or compassion, or all of that is what's healing the relationship itself. So I think, again, like, it's not just our work, but our studies should kind of align themselves and then kind of like open up towards that field too. And I think that's what we've been talking about in this podcast, like, for the past, I don't know how many years now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always there.
Yeah. This is, I couldn't agree more with your second point. And I wanted to go, but I want to go back to your first, the first point of like, of just, you know, choosing where we want to be and saying like, and knowing that we live right now in this, massage therapy lives in this gray area between a luxury good, a luxury service, a quasi medical service, a restorative service, which I think I'll call that like more on the mental side, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, someone comes in for a relaxation massage. It's, mm-hmm. they want that feeling of physical as well, like mental as well as physical relaxation. We have this gray area that we live in where we are a little bit of a lot of different things, which then makes up our own thing. And I wonder how much we actually need to get into something else. I think that gray area, that intersection point, like that edge of our, like, we know we have a lane, right? Like, there's a lane mm-hmm. that we exist in. Mm-hmm. And I think that our lane is actually kind of magical, and it's a really special place for us to be. And the more that we try to push ourselves into these other places, into the medical system, into like, you know, into the chiropractor's office, pushing ourselves into these other things which are established and have much more firm edges around them, I think we do ourselves a disservice, and I think we do our clients a disservice. Mm-hmm. And further to that, there are fewer massage schools now by a pretty significant number in the US than there were 10 or even 20 or even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, there are fewer massage schools, which means there are fewer massage therapists being trained. And every massage therapist that I know right now is pretty much booked out. So what's the problem that we're trying to solve by integrating ourselves what's the problem that we're trying to solve by integrating ourselves into the medical establishment? I don't think that there's, like, if we were training tons and tons of massage therapists, or there was an underemployment, or there was a crisis of underemployment among massage therapists, then I could understand why you want to like get people into a system, because then, you know, then you can do,
then your, those then, people disappear and
yeah they can go they can go there and it's the a, system, it's, a yeah. it's yeah it's legit
yeah
but I don't think that that's a problem. I don't think that's a problem that we have. There are two things that Sandy brought up in her episode that I actually think are real problems that we face. one of which is, and this is a big place for her, is the ergonomics, right? Like mm-hmm. one of the big reasons that massage therapists stop being massage therapists is that they get physically, they mm-hmm. get physically hurt. Mm-hmm. I have lots of thoughts about that, but like learning how to do the work better is very important. Mm-hmm. And that I think that's a worthwhile conversation for us to have. Mm-hmm. Her fundamental belief that most massage therapists are physically working too hard in session, I think, is pretty damn spot on. Mm-hmm. And then the second point that she brought up that I thought was really, I latched right onto is getting enough training for massage therapists in the economics of doing business, mm-hmm. Like whether as independent massage therapists where like, hey, if you're in Massachusetts and you make $100, you didn't actually make $100. Mm-hmm. Like a pretty significant portion of that $100 is going to go to the state and the feds. So you should mm-hmm. probably remember to do this. That's a big one for me. And mm-hmm. then also like making sure that people understand what the economics of a multi-practitioner practice are. Mm-hmm. That's also really, really important. Like we can't, you know, you can't expect to be paid more. Mm-hmm. If you don't understand, you can't right. understand, like there's a lot of overhead that goes into these things, but we right. need to have that economic stuff because yeah. like you said, it's not the techniques, it's how to do the business. It's like how right. to run the business and like how to do the work well. And so that you can do it for 40 years, like Sandy has right. and making so that like the economics of it don't stress you so much that you burn out mm-hmm. because you can't pay your rent. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had a very visceral response to like what I thought, and maybe I'm mischaracterizing this. I probably am miscategorizing it, but I think she asserted that massage therapists want to get paid more than they're worth, and that they also don't want to work hard. And I think oh, we're both entitled and lazy. Like that's probably not the most charitable interpretation, but that's what I heard. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's like, mm-hmm. all right. So like, I'm interested, and I think it's like, she's got a lot, there's a lot that I agreed with, and that's the thing that's hard for me.
Yeah. And she said another thing that was really resonant with me. She mentioned that kind of like, I think ties all this together, is that she mentioned doing this as a vocation or a profession versus doing it as a job. And I was like, spot on. But that's the thing. And that's the thing, because if I do it as my thing, like this is my thing, I don't know, is vocation a better word for this, a profession? Which one is more like a calling? Because vocation is something.
For me, vocation actually really makes a lot of sense. Like mm-hmm. the school that I teach at, the massage school, Alexi Levine, who runs it, who's the chair of the Massachusetts Board of Massage Therapists. He also served on the Massachusetts Board of Trade Schools, mm-hmm. and a vocation is something that you have apprenticeship. There's an expectation that as you do this more, you're going to understand what you're doing and you're going to be able to grow from there. It's also mm-hmm. like a word that's more associated with like physical, like a physical type work than like mm-hmm. mental type work.
Right. But it's like, for me, it's so funny because this is where language and translation comes in that she also mentions, but I don't think we're going to have time for that. But so for me, like vocation is meaning a profession or a job that you're called to do, or that's your
It's your life's work.
It's not just a job for you. It is who you are, or it is a big part of who you are. So for me, like when we talk about like vocation and doing it as a job, those are the two kind of like end game. However, I do think that just because you do this as a vocation, just because you feel passionate about it, it doesn't mean you need to get underpaid, or it doesn't mean that you need to work harder. And just because you're doing it as a job, it doesn't mean that you should work less and get paid more. No. Those are not related. And I do understand the people though. For my problem with like, however much I had interacted with other massage therapists is that I get disappointed when people do this as a job. And I'm like, it is really hard if you do it as a job. If you don't believe in it, if you don't love it, it is a hard job. Like there's so many other jobs that are easier than this and you should be doing that. If it doesn't matter what you do, then this is not the job for you because it is hard. It is physically, emotionally. I definitely agree with the ergonomics. We do work too, like harder than we should be. However, like not so much sold on the don't do any deep tissue kind of deal. It's like, just do it smart. That's where ergonomics and physics come in. But again, we're talking about
spoken as somebody physics. Who went to architecture school.
Exactly. So it's easy for me. Like that's the thing. Like that's what I realized in school too. I was like, it's easy for me to understand these forces, but that's where like education come in, and definitely the economics. Like, again, like you want to do it as a job, you better do your math. Like you want to do it as a vacation, you better do your math before you start, because you have no idea what you're getting into, especially if you want to do your own business, you have no idea. And those schools, I don't think they paint a realistic picture.
Yeah. And I think that like the schools also, I think we also ask the schools to do too much in some ways. And this actually goes back to another episode of The Thinking Practitioner, their most recent one, with Alyssa Haynes, who of the Massage Business Blueprint, where she actually makes a really great case that a lot of this economics, the economic stuff, like shouldn't be part of school, it should be included. Like there should be an introduction, but like, in order to run, if you want to run your own practice, that's something that you need to like, you need to learn that as a separate thing on
as
its,
an
own,
advanced
on its
something.
Own later. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You need to know, like I mean, our business and ethics class, the business part of our business and ethics class, like a big part of it involved like creating a vision board for your business. And it's like, come on now. Like that's like, but at the same time, like that was probably the right thing to do with the sophistication that we had when we were, you know, as a class, probably like somewhere between like, you know, zero and 50 hours into our 200 clinic hours, where it's like, we don't like, I don't even like, you can't know at that point. You can't even know at that point if you want to be a, if you want to do this as a profession. And for me, that was in 2013. I didn't open my practice until 2020. So it's like, it makes sense to push it out. Mm-hmm. But I think that's again where the vocational aspect of like, or the kind of maybe not tiered licensure, but a pathway for someone to follow as they grow into it, right? Like if you join the carpenters union, you start off as an apprentice. Like there's no expectation that you are going to understand how to price like buying 2x4s, right?
Right.
But you learn, and that's, I think the like, this is the idea of vocation is a job that you learn how to do by doing it. Mm-hmm. And through the work and through mentorship around the work, then you grow into your own, and eventually you become a master, you become, go from an apprentice to a carpenter, to a journeyman, to a master carpenter. And and that's where we want to like, and I think that model is something that we can adopt in massage therapy if we want to. But I think each of us as individuals, we can adopt that sort of model in our own approach to how we do our business, how we run our practices, where we spend our time and energy and money in terms of like our continuing education. Like, do we need to, do I like, do I need to work on techniques? Because like, I have a bunch of people coming in with this one, one thing. Like I have a massage school classmate who he's worked with, like he ended up like getting a lot of people with hypermobile EDS in his, in his practice. So he had to, he's like, oh shoot, I should probably make sure that I know everything that I can possibly know about this. So that directed his work, you know, just like sometimes the direction is techniques. Sometimes the direction should be business. Sometimes it should be like psychological of like what you're doing now of like, okay, how do I integrate this with other things that are part of, that are like happening under the same roof?
Right. So I think it's like a super complex question. The education part of it, I'm definitely up for the tiered thing, because I do believe it's like, yeah, like when you start off at the beginning, this is what you're getting paid. And same thing, what you, she said about the franchise, like you have to know the economics, and they not like, I mean, you know, somebody's making money, but it's not unrealistic that you're only getting paid $17 an hour if the massage costs like $60. There's so much goes into the background. And oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like Massage Envy's job isn't to, or Element's job isn't to give you a, isn't to give you like a job that like a job that's going to make you all the money you could ever imagine to make. Its job is to, it's an organization, it's a business. Its job is to make money. And there's two ways you do that. You sell more stuff. Yeah. You make more money by either selling more stuff or for the same price, or spending less to sell the same amount of stuff. Like that's that, like there's your like macro econ 101 class. Like those are the two easiest levers, like sell more and pay less for it. Right. Like, or charge more for what you sell. Yeah. Like those are the three levers. Yeah. Those are the only three levers anyone has in a business any damn way.
Right. Exactly. But like, I do believe that they do have good points. Like for example, like, you know, when I started a business, it was safe for me to do so because I have no kids, no debt, no house, no dogs, no nothing. Like I could fail as many times as I would want to.
Exactly.
However, if somebody wants a paycheck every 2 weeks, then Element is your way, or whatever franchise is out there. It doesn't matter, but like it depends on what you want. However, if you want to excel in your profession, at one certain point, you can go on your own business and you can ask for whatever you want to ask for. How much people pay for you.
Yeah.
Like honestly, it's not you. It's like how much people are willing to give you. Like, don't give it back. Like you can't just go like, oh no. Here's your money back because I only
take this.
If they want to give it to you, like let them. Like,
yeah, exactly. Make it easy.
It's value. It's not about your time. It's not about your knowledge. It's like how this perceived value again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just think back to when, one of the massage therapist that I spoke to before I was going to massage therapy, before I went into actually becoming a massage therapist, their advice was like, yeah, don't specialize yet. Like don't try and specialize in anything. Like do a couple thousand sessions before you like do a thousand sessions before you like decide what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't take quite as pragmatic of an approach, but I did like, but that advice has stuck with me for almost 15 years because it's like, yeah, like what I want to do has evolved so much. Like what I believe that I can do has evolved so much.
Right.
And because of those things, it's like, yeah, we should take our time. I always say it, like Massachusetts has a minimum requirement for a massage therapist of 100 clinic hours. Mm-hmm. And like, one of the biggest selling points for the massage school for me was that we doubled that. Mm-hmm. Like at our school, like if you graduate from our regular, our program, there are now like a couple of other options that are, that can be made available. But in our school, the only option was to get 200 hours in before you get paid for a massage,
right?
And before you can get your license and like before you can graduate. That's great. Like that extra 100 hours is where the magic happened for me, to be like, oh, not only do I really love this, but I also could do this for the rest of my life. And there are some things about this that like there, and like, also I know enough to know what I don't want to do. Right. Like, oh, actually I don't want to be in a dark room. I don't want to be in a room that is silent. I don't want to actually have music on like that. That's distraction for me. So like all of those things became like the beginning of my, like, that's like, those were free experiments for me.
Yeah. Learning lessons. Absolutely. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And like, yeah. I would much rather do those. I would much rather like either, I would much rather get paid to do those or to like, not like, or then like, you know, I would much rather have those experiences in school rather than doing it wrong or learning that I, or, you know, starting a business and being like, oh, actually I don't like doing things this way. Now I have to like let go of an existing client base to create a new one. That sounds awful to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a really interesting podcast. I really loved it, how they touched on so many things. So I think, I think so many things, but it was great. And I think, we all think towards the same, you know, again, like I keep coming back to this, like we all want the best for this profession. And I'm the same, like, I think we, you know, like I do think we need to be valued more. However, I do also think that massage therapists generally need to know more. Maybe it's my strict mentality, but I think we can study a lot more and we should. And that way we could, you know, we can get more, more value, but definitely I think those two things need to go together. It's not magical that, oh, we're just going to get paid or, you know, included into the system without us doing the background work on it.
Yeah.
So I always tell people, it's like, just, you know, just keep on studying, just don't stop and just keep doing, and you're going to find what your thing is. Like, you're going to find it, and then you're going to get your value. That's when you can ask for your worth. Like, once you do your thing, I think so.
Absolutely. And we need this diversity. We need a diversity of viewpoints, not just like, not just in terms of like techniques, but in terms of like overall vision for the profession, overall vision for the vocation. And we need to have these good faith disagreements where everyone comes in exactly like you said, everyone comes in from a different viewpoint with the same, with a full, like a wholehearted belief that they're interacting with people who also want the best for the profession. And that like, that's so valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think we can all learn from each other and, you know, different experiences and different backgrounds. So I love the disagreements, especially if it's like this, like, well, we're both kind of want the same things. Like it's fine.
Yeah.
And I think we both would, or like all of us on that podcast, like we would all find our own people who want to learn from us or, you know, or, you know, listen to what we want to say. So absolutely amazing. I really love it. I really love those podcasts that keep our juices flowing. So we should put a cap on this right now, right?
Yeah, I think this ends here. Yes. But go listen to that. Go listen to that other podcast. And you know, with that, I am really interested in, if you're listening still, I'm really interested, and we are both really interested in hearing what got you about that. What's gotten you about this? Do you disagree with us? Do you disagree? Do you agree with us? Like, I don't care. I want to hear
what
it.
You think. So,
So please do send us a, like, follow up with us, find us on Instagram, share this with, like, if you've got peers who are struggling, share this with them. We'd love to hear more. With that, we will see you next time back here at Hands at the Table. Thank you for listening to this episode of Hands at the Table. If you'd like to follow up with us, you can find Bori on Instagram at Bori Suranyi LMT and Jeff on Instagram at Jay Bramhall. If you can leave a review or rating for this podcast anywhere that you've listened to your podcasts, we would really appreciate it because that'll help other people find the podcast. Thanks, and we'll see you next time at Hands at the Table.